You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Larry Doyle's second novel, Go Mutants, is about a group of outcasts struggling with adolescence and trying to make it through high school. But this isn't your typical coming-of-age story about alienated teens. Many of them are actually aliens. The book combines references to classic science fiction movies with wits, satire, and lots of teenage angst. Mr. Doyle knows something about angst. He spent several years as a writer and producer for The Simpsons. He's also the author of I Love You, Beth Cooper, and he is a frequent contributor to The New Yorker, and I'm very pleased that he's joined me again on this show. Hi.
Hi. Good afternoon.
Can you describe the world in which your book takes place?
Well, the idea of the book is that all of these movies that people might remember, the Atomic Mutant movies and all the Alien Invasion movies, are kind of the history of the book, and it's now a generation after that. And you have some of the teenage aliens who are the offspring of the original invaders, who are kind of the juvenile delinquents of the school.
But they're not. This is Earth?
This is regular Earth, and a lot of it's very familiar because, you know, the explanation is they've used the alien technology in a different sort of way, but they have their equivalent of iPods and everything like that.
But you've set it in a hybrid year, 1950, 2040.
In the book, it's the year 10 because they gave up on the Christian era. Once all the advanced aliens came down, the years after Christ didn't seem to make any sense anymore, and so they just started over. And so it's technically in the year 10, but it is a kind of, stylistically, it's very 50s-ish, but then it's got moving sidewalks and all the things that people in the 50s thought the future would have.
How do you pronounce your hero's name? It's spelled J!M, which I would assume is Jim misspelled.
Yeah, it was really hard to write that in a book because it kept breaking the line after the exclamation point.
Spell check doesn't like it either.
I think I explained near the end that it can't actually be pronounced by a human voice, but I always thought it was like J-M with a very high piercing sound in between.
And what kind of creature is he?
He's as most of the aliens in the 50s movies were, he's humanoid, but he has a giant bulging sort of blue brain that you can sort of see in through his skull, and you can see his thoughts.
And his father was a movie star of sorts.
Well, his father was the alien who is being blamed for all of the invasions. And so he's kind of in that world. He's the Pol Pot or the Hitler of that world. And so he's like the son of Hitler, which makes him, you know, less popular in high school.
And his mother?
His mother is a sexy Catwoman.
Stripper cocktail waitress.
She's not a stripper.
No.
Okay. She's a cocktail waitress in a place where maybe some of the cocktail waitresses are strippers, but she's not one.
And since Jim is blamed for his father's sins, does he have any friends?
He's got a couple. He's his best friend is Johnny, who is a radioactive ape, half ape, half human. And he's sort of based on Marlon Brando from The Wild One. And he's got a friend named Jelly, who's sort of an amorphous mass who takes the form of a fat kid because it's the easiest one to do.
Are there humans in this world, too?
Well, there are a lot of humans. It's most of the school, as you might imagine, is human, like 90-95%. And so he's got people that he encounters. There's Russ, who's a guy who's always on his tail. Turns out he's sort of got hidden reasons for that. And Rusty, who is Russ's twin sister, who's kind of like likes to hang out with the mutants.
Well, you know, whenever an author writes a novel, there's that usual question. How much of this is autobiographical?
Well, it actually happened in an alternate universe to me. I think the main character is a lot like I was in high school. He's in a brooding stage and he worries a lot and he thinks a lot about the future and he thinks a lot about the world and why it's, you know, terrible. And I mean, he's classic adolescent.
And then there's Marie.
And then there's Marie, who's the girl that he's in a difficult position with her because he grew up with her and they've been friends all this time, but he wants it to be something more than that. And it's very hard to do that transition from being a friend to being a girlfriend, and he can't quite figure it out.
And Jim gets bullied a lot.
He sort of does as much bullying as he gets bullied, or at least he doesn't
Does he have alien powers that enable him to retaliate?
Not at the beginning of the book. He gains some in the middle of the book, and that causes some serious problems for him. But he bullies them with his brain. Russ is the guy who's always picking on him, but he's always saying things to Russ that just make Russ madder. So,
besides The Simpsons, you also wrote Beavis and Butthead. Was that just a coincidence, or is there something about the teenage years that inspire you?
That was a very, very long time ago. So,
you've been writing about kids in New York as well.
Right. I think I like that age because the world is filled with all sorts of possibilities, both negative and positive. When you're a teenager, everything that happens is either the worst thing that ever happened to you or the best thing that ever happened to you. And in a lot of ways, your life is nothing but possibility. So, you know, there's a lot that seems to be riding on it.
You have three kids, don't you? Are they teenagers?
Not yet. I have an 11-year-old and 6-year-old twins.
Just think of all the source material you're going to get when they hit their teenage years.
Oh, you know, I think about that. I think about, I just have to avoid that. You know, I know people write about their kids all the time, but I really, and this will come back to haunt me, I really don't want to put them through that. I would hate for them to be reading a book and then seeing that something was based on them.
My guest is Larry Doyle, whose latest book is called Go Mutants. Your first novel was I Love You, Beth Cooper, and that one was set in your real high school.
Yeah, but lack of imagination more than anything. I thought for a while of making up a name for a high school, and I just couldn't think of any that sounded right, so I figured I'll just call it Buffalo Grove High School, and then at least I'll know the geography of the high school.
Well, for many kids, high school is something of an alien planet.
Yeah, well, I mean, you don't feel like yourself, certainly, most of the time. And then, as I was just saying, everything seems so important, and I'm trying to conjure up some of the things that I thought, well, my life is now officially over. It went on.
Well, you've written television scripts, film scripts. Did you write the script for I Love You, Beth Cooper, the movie?
I did. I wrote that script with Chris Columbus was the director, and we sort of worked on it together, but I was the writer.
This book references a great deal of B-movies from the 50s and 60s. Are those the movies that you grew up watching?
They're not the only movies. I love movies, and I watched lots of movies for a very long time. But I did, when I was a kid, my dad used to wake us up on Friday nights in Chicago, and we'd watch something called Creature Features, mm-hmm. which was this, you know, so they would show all of those movies. I wasn't actually around when those movies came out, but, you know, they were on TV a lot, and we'd watch them on Saturdays, too.
And some of these movies have become cult favorites, and I've always wondered why really bad movies become cult favorites. Do you think that there's some enjoyment in laughing at the silliness of some of these things?
Well, my feeling about it is, and you're right, a lot of those movies are really bad. Some of them are actually quite good, like The Day the Earth Stood Still is really a good movie. But they are also, in a way, because they're so, they're transparent, and they show you what people were thinking at the time. And you can see a lot about the culture, their attitudes about race, their attitudes about sex. They really come through in those movies. I would recommend for anyone who wants to watch those movies to watch the trailers because they're much, much better than the movies.
Is that what you did to prepare for this, watch the trailers?
I watched all the trailers and I watched a lot of those movies.
And there are a lot of inside references here.
Yeah, well, the whole fun of the book supposedly will be for people who get those references, get them. I tried to write the book in such a way that if you don't get the references, it'll just go by you or you'll think I made it up.
Does Jim's skin, which has special qualities, come from one of those films?
No, not really. That was me trying to retro-engineer these 50s aliens are all basically just whatever rubber suit they happen to have. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted him to be a giant brained alien, but then I started thinking about what would his real biology be, and so I came up with this idea. He becomes photoelectric in the middle of the book. He turns from blue to silver.
Well, Bart Simpson, to some degree, almost looks like a giant brained alien. His head is way too big for his body. I don't know whether that was just the way Matt Groening drew.
Also, Matt, when he draws the characters, he never separates their, except for Marge, none of them have a hairline.
Uh-huh.
And so you don't really know how much of Bart's head is hair and how much of it is, you know, where his head stops. Lisa, too, has got a gigantic head, but she's got, you know, who knows what part of that's her brain and what part of it's just yellow.
Do you ever get tired of answering questions about writing for The Simpsons?
I don't really tire of answering questions. I just had an online interview where they asked the audience to ask questions, and the top 10 questions were all about The Simpsons, many of which were about things that I wasn't around for or that I knew nothing about. And oftentimes, if you don't answer those questions, they think you're just keeping it from them, and I'm just not. I mean, I was there for 4 years, and it's been 20 years, so that's 20% of the show.
Weren't the film rights picked up for Go Mutants before you even finished writing it?
Yeah. Universal and Imagine bought the film rights to the book based on seeing that it had been sold to Echo Books.
And are you working on the screenplay for this one, too?
Yeah. I just finished the second draft.
This gives you a chance to actually write in special effects.
Yeah.
Although are you going to do cheesy special effects? Or are you going to take advantage of all of the things that can be done nowadays?
Well, that's all out of my hands. My hope would be that the movie would look as realistic as possible so that you have a kind of a dry base from which the ridiculousness can play off of. I wouldn't want it to look purposely cheesy.
Well, we can have jetpacks here. What is Plex?
Plex is something that I came up with, which is sort of their version of the internet, except it also carries... It's completely wireless, and it also carries energy as well. So the entire electrical grid and all of broadcasting and all of the internet are all through this one system. And I based it on Nikola Tesla's almost 100 years ago today. He tried to build this kind of a system.
He's the man who gave us alternating current.
Yes, and then got cheated out of the patents of it. He's sort of a genius who did a lot of things and then didn't get credit for him. He also invented the radio, and he didn't get credit for that. And this system would have worked, but nobody wanted to develop it back then.
Sounds like something that's plausible. Of course, when it breaks down, then everything breaks down. Like the Citroëns used to have this incredible engineering system. But if one thing went wrong, a brake lining failed, the next thing you knew, the whole car couldn't run.
Well, yeah, but I mean, that's why you have safeguards in, like, you know, if you have an underwater oil well, you've got that big stopper thing that stops it.
Yes.
And so you don't have that problem.
Have you always written comedy? Is funny something that comes out automatically?
I should have something funny to say here, shouldn't I? Yes, everything I've written has sort of been comic in nature, and I have no real explanation for why that is. I liked reading that when I was younger, and so I tried doing that, you know. And first it was all imitative. I would do very bad Woody Allen kind of things. I remember the first thing I sent to the New Yorker was a very bad Woody Allen parody, but also it was like 8,000 words long, which I'm not even sure Woody could sustain one of those pieces for 8,000 words, but I didn't sustain it for more than about a sentence. And then, you know, I just started copying other people until I copied enough different people that it sounded like me.
Well, that is a big problem in sustaining a whole novel and remaining consistently funny.
Yes and no. I mean, the truth is the most important thing in the novel is to make sure that the story works, because then you can hang all of your jokes. The jokes, we had this, now I'm the one bringing up The Simpsons. On The Simpsons, we always spent as much time, if not more time, working out the story and what the story was about and what the characters were thinking and doing in the story than we did writing the jokes.
Because then the jokes follow automatically. Unfortunately, so much of sitcom today is a bunch of jokes and kind of an inane plot.
Right, and if there isn't a good story, or if the jokes don't come out of character, they don't really work as well. You know, the reason why The Simpsons works when it works really well is because that's exactly what Homer would say in that situation. And it's exactly how he might feel about something.
And I'm assuming you're working on another novel now?
I'm working on...
Or an 8,000-word piece for The New Yorker?
I'm working on selling this one. And I have an idea for what I might do next, but I haven't really started it yet.
Larry Doyle's latest is called Go Mutants, and it's published by Echo. Thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you. It was fun.